Chapter 6. Mangy short horns, laugh. But I tell you plain and simple, the best of you ain't knee-high fit to tie daylight's moccasin strings. Ain't I right, Campbell? Ain't I right, Mac? Daylight's one of the old guard, one of the real sourdoughs. And in them days they want ary a steamboat or ary a trading post, and we cusses had to live off'n salmon bellies and rabbit tracks. He gazed triumphantly around, and in the applause that followed arose cries for a speech from Daylight. He signified his consent. A chair was brought, and he was helped to stand upon it. He was no more sober than the crowd above which he now towered, a wild crowd, uncouthly garmented, every foot moccasined or mug-lugged, three, with mittens dangling from necks, and with furry ear flaps raised, so that they took on the seeming of the winged helmets of the Norsemen. Daylight's black eyes were flashing, and the flush of strong drink flooded darkly under the bronze of his cheeks. He was greeted with round on round of affectionate cheers, which brought a suspicious moisture to his eyes, albeit many of the voices were inarticulate and inebriate. And yet, men have so behaved since the world began, feasting, fighting, and carousing, whether in the dark cave mouth, or by the fire of the squatting place, in the palaces of imperial Rome, and the rock strongholds of robber barons, or in the sky-aspiring hotels of modern times and in the boozing kens of Sailor Town. Just so were these men, empire builders in the Arctic light, boastful and drunken and clamorous, winning surcease for a few wild moments from the grim reality of their heroic toil. Modern heroes they, and in no wise different from the heroes of old time. "Well, fellows, I don't know what to say to you all," Daylight began lamely, striving still to control his whirling brain. "Think I'll tell you all a story. I had a partner once, down in Juneau. He come from North Carolina, and he used to tell this same story to me. It was down in the mountains in his country, and it was a wedding. There they was, the family and all the friends. The parson was just putting on the last touches, and he says, 'They as the Lord have joined, let no man put us under.'" (3) McLuke. "A watertight, Eskimo boot, made from walrus hide and trimmed with fur." "Parson," says the bridegroom, "I rises to question your grammar in that there sentence. I want this wedding done right." When the smoke clears away, the bride she looks around, and sees a dead parson, a dead bridegroom, a dead brother, two dead uncles, and five dead wedding guests. So she heaves a mighty strong sigh and says, "Them newfangled, self-cocking revolvers sure has played hell with my prospects." "And so I say to you all," Daylight added, as the roar of laughter died down, "that them four kings of Jack Kearns sure has played hell with my prospects. I'm busted iron a kite, and I'm hitting the trail for Dia, going out," someone called. A spasm of anger wrought on his face for a flashing instant, but in the next his good humor was back again. "I know you all are only poking fun asking such a question," he said, with a smile. "Of course I ain't going out. Take the oath again, Daylight," the same voice cried. "I sure will. I first come over Chilkoot in 83. I went out over the pass in a fall blizzard, with a rag of a shirt, and a cup of raw flour. I got my grub steak in Juneau that winter, and in the spring I went over the pass once more. And once more the famine drew me out. Next spring I went in again, and I swore then that I'd never come out till I made my stake. Well, I ain't made it, and here I am. And I ain't going out now. I get the mail, and I come right back. I won't stop the night at Dia. I'll hit up Chilkoot soon as I change the dogs, and get the mail and grub. And so I swear once more, by the mill tails of hell, and the head of John the Baptist, I'll never hit for the outside till I make my pile. And I tell you all, here and now, it's got to be an almighty big pile." "How much might you call a pile?" Bettles demanded from beneath, his arms clutched lovingly around Daylight's legs. "Yes, how much? What do you call a pile?" others cried. Daylight steadied himself for a moment and debated. Are 5 millions, he said slowly, and held up his hand for silence as his statement was received with derisive yells. LL be real conservative, and put the bottom notch at 1 million. And for not an ounce less than that will I go out of the country. Again his statement was received with an outburst of derision. Not only had the total gold output of the Yukon up to date been below 5 millions, but no man had ever made a strike of 100,000, much less of 1 million. You all listen to me. You seen Jack Kearns get a hunch tonight. We had him sure beat before the draw. His ornery three kings was no good. But he just knew there was another king coming that was his hunch, and he got it. And I tell you all, I got a hunch. There's a big strike coming on the Yukon, and it's just about due. I don't mean no ornery moose-eyed, Birch Creek kind of a strike. I mean a real rip-snorter air razor. I tell you all, she's in the air and hell-bent for election. Nothing can stop her, and she'll come up river. There's where you all track my moccasins in the near future, if you all want to find me somewhere in the country around Stewart River, Indian River, and Klondike River. When I get back with the mail, I'll head that way so fast you all won't see my trail for smoke. She's a-coming, fellows, gold from the grassroots down, $100 to the pan, and a stampede in from the outside 50,000 strong. You all'll think all hell's busted loose when that strike is made. He raised his glass to his lips. Here's kindness, and hoping you all will be in on it. He drank and stepped down from the chair, falling into another one of Bettle's bear hugs. If I was you, Daylight, I wouldn't mush today, Joe Hines counseled, coming in from consulting the spirit thermometer outside the door. Here in for a good cold snap. It's 62 below now, and still going down. Better wait till she breaks. Daylight laughed, and the old sourdoughs around him laughed. Just like you short horns, Bettles cried, afeard of a little frost. And blamed little you know Daylight, if you think frost can stop him. Freeze his lungs, if he travels in it, was the reply. Freeze pap and lollipop. Look here, Hines, you only been in this here country 3 years. You ain't seasoned yet. I've seen Daylight do 50 miles up on the Koyukuk on a day when the thermometer busted at 72. Hines shook his head dolefully. Them's the kind that does freeze their lungs, he lamented. If Daylight pulls out before this snap breaks, he'll never get through and him traveling without tender fly. It's 1,000 miles to Dia, Bettles announced, climbing on the chair and supporting his swaying body by an arm passed around Daylight's neck. Tease 1,000 miles, I'm saying, and most of the trail unbroke, but I bet any chichaquo anything he wants that Daylight makes Dia in 30 days. That's an average of over 33 miles a day, Doc Watson warned, and I've traveled some myself. A blizzard on Chilkoot would tie him up for a week. Yep, Bettles retorted, and Daylight'll do the second 1,000 back again on end in 30 days more, and I got $500 that says so, and damn the blizzards. To emphasize his remarks, he pulled out a gold sack the size of a bologna sausage and thumped it down on the bar. Doc Watson thumped his own sack alongside. Hold on, Daylight cried. Edel's right, and I want in on this. I bet 500 that 60 days from now I pull up at the Tivoli door with the Dia mail. A skeptical roar went up, and a dozen men pulled out their sacks. Jack Kearns crowded in close and caught Daylight's attention. I take you, Daylight, he cried. Woe to one you don't, not in 75 days. No charity, Jack, was the reply. He bettens even, and the time is 60 days. 75 days, and 2-1 you don't, Kearns insisted. 50 mile'll be wide open and the rim ice rotten. What you win from me is yours, Daylight went on. Andy, by thunder, Jack, you can't give it back that way. I won't bet with you. You're trying to give me money. But I tell you all one thing, Jack, I got another hunch. I'm going to win it back some one of these days. You all just wait till the big strike up river. Then you and me'll take the roof off and sit in a game that'll be full man size. Is it a go? They shook hands. Of course he'll make it, Kearns whispered in Bettle's ear. And there's 500 daylights back in 60 days, he added aloud. Billy Rollins closed with the wager, and Bettles hugged Kearns ecstatically. By Jupiter, I ban take that bet, Olive Henderson said, dragging daylight away from Bettles and Kearns. Winner pays, daylight shouted, closing the wager. And I'm sure going to win, and 60 days is a long time between drinks, so I pay now. Name your brand, you hoochinoos. Name your brand. Bettles, a glass of whiskey in hand, climbed back on his chair, and swaying back and forth, sang the one song he knew. Comma, it's Henry Ward Beecher and Sunday school teachers all sing of the sassafras root. But you bet all the same, if it had its right name, it's the juice of the forbidden fruit. The crowd roared out the chorus. You bet all the same, if it had its right name, it's the juice of the forbidden fruit. Somebody opened the outer door. A vague gray light filtered in. Burning daylight, someone called warningly. Daylight paused for nothing, heading for the door and pulling down his ear flaps. Comma stood outside by the sled, a long, narrow affair, 16 inches wide, and 7.5 feet in length, its slatted bottom raised 6 inches above the steel-shod runners. On it, lashed with thongs of moose hide, were the light canvas bags that contained the mail, and the food and gear for dogs and men. In front of it, in a single line, lay curled 5 frost-rimed dogs. They were huskies, matched in size and color, all unusually large and all gray. From their cruel jaws to their bushy tails they were as like as peas in their likeness to timber wolves. Wolves they were, domesticated, it was true, but wolves in appearance and in all their characteristics. On top the sled load, thrust under the lashings and ready for immediate use, were 2 pairs of snowshoes. Bettles pointed to a robe of Arctic hare skins, the end of which showed in the mouth of a bag. That's his bed, he said. 6 pounds of rabbit skins. Warmest thing he ever slept under, but I'm damned if it could keep me warm, and I can go some myself. Daylight's a hellfire furnace, that's what he is. I'd hate to be that Indian, Doc Watson remarked. He'll kill him sure, Bettles chanted exultantly. I know. I've been with Daylight on trail. That man ain't never been tired in his life. Don't know what it means. I seen him travel all day with wet socks at 45 below. There ain't another man living can do that. While his talk went on, Daylight was saying goodbye to those that clustered around him. The Virgin wanted to kiss him, and, fuddled slightly though he was with the whiskey, he saw his way out without compromising with the apron string. He kissed the Virgin, but he kissed the other 3 women with equal partiality. He pulled on his long mittens, roused the dogs to their feet, and took his plus at the G-pole. 4, 4, a G-pole. Stout pole projecting forward from one side of the front end of the sled, by which the sled is steered. Mush, you beauties, he cried. The animals threw their weights against their breastbands on the instant, crouching low to the snow, and digging in their claws. They whined eagerly, and before the sled had gone half a dozen lengths, both Daylight and Comma in the rear were running to keep up. And so, running, man and dogs dipped over the bank, and down to the frozen bed of the Yukon, and in the gray light were gone. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.